This is the interactive portion of the show. Andy Jacobson with us. Surprise Kill Vanish, her book. And we'll take your calls when we come back on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back. Our final hour with Andy Jacobson. We'll take your calls as we talk about her work, Surprise Kill Vanish, The Secret History of CIA, Paramilitary Armies, Operators, and Assassins. Andy's website is her name, linked up at coasttocoastam.com. Andy, what about the possibility of other countries like Russia, like China, doing the same thing where these assassins are everywhere? Are they doing it too?
Absolutely. I mean, look no further than Russia. My goodness, they have everyone, famous big cases, usually with poisons, Litvinenko,
yep.
And of course, recently, the Skripal attacks. So Russia leads the world in assassins, and they have a long history of doing this. I tell a story going back to 1950 that I thought was super interesting, and I chose to thread it in the narrative because one of their assassins defected to the United States, so we learned an extraordinary amount about the Russian programs from that defector.
Interesting. I had a guest on last night, Chris Newby, who was talking about her work, Bitten, about Lyme disease and how it's biological warfare, but she was very complimentary about you, Annie.
Oh, bless her heart.
Do you know her?
No, but I can't wait to read her book. I know about her book because I believe, if I'm not mistaken, she was able to get some really cool new information on the Nazi scientists who were involved in the program.
Yeah, absolutely. So this program continues. What do you think the reaction is from the CIA to your book?
You know, George, I think that the CIA is aware of what people tell journalists. I mean, I'm being pretty candid here, but I'm also being speculative.
Do you think they welcome it, or do you think they go crazy?
I'm guessing here, but it's late at night and we're talking. I have a feeling that there is information that they want out. Do they want all of it out? I don't know. But I think that if you look at the other end of the spectrum, the stuff that must not be known isn't known.
Have you ever been approached? I have not. But have you ever been approached by someone in government in some clandestine operation who said, Annie, we need to leak this out. We can't do it in conventional media ways. Put it in a book or do this or do that. Has that ever happened to you?
No, but I have to say, I'm often accused of that. You know, I've had people at my book signing stand up and say, you're a CIA agent.
No, really?
Yes.
Did they disrupt you?
Oh, my goodness. I mean, I love book signings for that reason. They're wonderful. They're lively events. But because I've written about such controversial things as Nazis and Area 51 and psychics, I mean, my book signings are populated by people who take this stuff seriously,
mm-hmm.
and also people who take it way too seriously, if that makes any sense.
Yeah, no, I get it. I get it.
Gone off the, you know, the other end of the spectrum. But I will say this. I file an extraordinary amount of FOIAs, right? Freedom of Information Act.
Sure.
You know, with every branch of government, NSA, Pentagon, you know, CIA, all of them. And the ones that come back from the Pentagon always have a feeling of extraordinary amounts of bureaucracy attached to them, right?
Mm-hmm.
And the ones that come from the CIA have a feeling of there's a human behind it.
And they're getting things done without a bureaucratic, you know, disruption.
Yes. And someone once said to me this, and it was very spooky. They said, Annie, do you ever wonder why the CIA releases certain bits of information to you? And that made me question, you know, on your question to me, George, which is like, that made me wonder why is the CIA letting me know something? Like, for example, you know, my book Phenomena was about psychics, and a lot of guys who have been on your show.
Yeah.
And the psychic programs. Super interesting. I filed a FOIA. Usually my FOIAs that come back from the CIA are, let's say, 10, 20, 30 pages long, if I'm lucky, right? They sent me 1,000 pages.
Wow. Well, what, for example, Annie, made Billy Wong talk to you? Why didn't he simply say, I'm sorry, I can't say anything?
Yeah, you know what? I tried to get Billy Waugh to talk to me for several years, and he always said no. And then he said, wait a minute, are you the lady who wrote Area 51? And I said, yes, I am. And he said, oh, I love that book. I'll be happy to talk to you.
Huh.
Come visit me in Florida. And I did.
On his own?
Yeah.
Do you think he had to get clearance?
I don't think so. I mean, I write in the book.
Once a CIA, always a CIA,
you know what?
Right?
He might. I actually say this. He retired at 82, or maybe not, because I went with Billy Waugh to Cuba, okay? So one of the things we did was visit the sons of some of the people that the CIA assassinated. So Billy Waugh and I traveled to Vietnam and sat there with General Jopp's son and his 92.
Is this for the book?
For the book. I write about it in the end of the book, right?
All right.
I kind of always stick myself in the very end of the book. So you see, I'm a human. The sources are human. This is real stuff, right? But the other place we went was to Cuba. Why? Well, the CIA killed Che Guevara. I mean, I interviewed Felix Rodriguez, who was in charge of the program. We didn't kill him, like, gun to the head. The Bolivian Rangers did that. But they were trained by the CIA, and Felix Rodriguez was there when that happened, as he talked about in my book. So we went to Cuba as a guest of, you're not going to believe this, Ernesto Guevara, Che's son.
Wow. How old is he now?
He is my age, 51. And Billy and Ernesto and a couple other guys we were with went, I told you about halo jumping out of a parachute and pulling the cord. That's what they did. And I thought to myself on that, you know, quote unquote visit, I thought, is this some kind of mission? And I really had to wonder, and I write more about it in the book. I don't want to give it away, but it really made you think, you know, because we were doing things, you know, scuba diving and jumping out of airplanes are called infiltration and exfiltration techniques. And that's what we were doing. And I thought, what's really going on here?
Interesting. Let's go to the phones. Christian's with us in San Pedro, California, to get things started. Hello, Christian.
Hi, George. And hey, Annie, I have your book, the one you did on Operation Paperclip. I was wondering, are you familiar with, and of course, in Oliver Stone's film JFK, actor Donald Sutherland portrayed him. He was known as, Man X. But
mm-hmm.
Man X in real life is L. Fletcher Prouty. Mm-hmm. L. Fletcher Prouty came out with two books. The first was The Secret Team in 1973, and then he followed that up umpteen years later after JFK came out. His second book was JFK, The CIA, Vietnam, and the Plot to Assassinate John F. Kennedy. I'm reading The Secret Team right now, and you really, if you are not familiar with, you should become familiar with Fletcher Prouty. You can, you know, watch him on YouTube in some of his discussions that he's given and lectures. And also, I highly recommend that you read the book, especially The Secret Team. And it's just my opinion about the whole the CIA is look, I'm sure there are a lot of good people like the FBI who are very patriotic and they're doing their duty. But, you know, because of a lot of screw-ups in the CIA's past that are very questionable, especially, the Bay of Pigs fiasco, the failure to, with 9/11 to connect the dots. Let me just end it this way. I think that as former President Harry Truman, who created the CIA and signed the CIA into existence with the signing of the National Security Action Memorandum in 1947, after JFK's assassination, in a newspaper article in December of 63, he said he really had a lot of second thoughts about creating the CIA and thinking, what did I sign into? What did I create by the stroke of a pen? You know, a Hydra, an organization that it's gone beyond its constitutional limits. But anyway, like I said, just so you understand for your own further knowledge and research, L. Fletcher Prouty, and he wrote a book called The Secret Team, and I highly recommend that you look into him and his background and keep writing more books. Okay, dear? Thank you.
Thank you so much.
Are you familiar with that guy's work at all?
Yes,
L. Fletcher?
Yes, and I actually quote him in Surprise, Kill, Vanish.
Perfect.
He had some very interesting things to say about what happened before JFK was assassinated, there's an incredible moment in CIA history where JFK was so furious with the Bay of Pigs because it embarrassed him.
It did.
First,
and that was underway with Eisenhower and Nixon in that administration.
Yes, they planned it, but JFK didn't stop it. It happens, it embarrasses him, and he's so furious with the CIA that he flipped the paramilitary capacity, which belonged to the CIA before then, he flipped it over to the Pentagon, and he gave them authority. And that's why Vietnam started as a paramilitary operation. But instead of the CIA doing it, it was the Defense Department, and they had an extraordinary amount of resources behind them. You know, we talked earlier about how small the CIA is, how they use a small footprint. Well,
and
I write in the book about how the extraordinary impact that had on the Vietnam War.
Well, didn't Kennedy, though, also fail to provide air support in the Bay of Pigs?
Yes, he did. I mean, but he was caught between a rock and a hard place because Castro made a brilliant move by having his one of his diplomats call up the United Nations and say the U.S. is attacking us, which we were, and it put Kennedy in this untenable position. He couldn't send those.
He couldn't support them.
No, he was stuck, and he was furious. And it's very interesting because I report a letter I found in the National Archives where Che Guevara personally thanks JFK for the Bay of Pigs. He says to him, and I'm paraphrasing, you turned us from a country nobody knew about to play around the world stage.
What happened between Che and Castro? They had some kind of fallout, didn't they, at the end?
They did have a falling out, and it's very interesting in the book because, well, first of all, the reason why the CIA wanted Che dead was because he was pro-nuclear war. He wanted nuclear weapons to be involved, and that's, you know, that made him a very dangerous fellow.
Yeah, and they were way too close to Florida.
But he spoke publicly about that. But what happened between Castro and Che is that Che began to realize, I mean, there were things that he was very wise about, but he was also extraordinarily violent and militaristic and had no problem killing people with his own hands. You know, anyone who betrayed him, he killed.
Dead.
And I write about that. Yep. That was it. He was serious about that. But he started to speak out against the Russians, against Moscow, saying these guys are full of, you know what, you know, these guys are just as bad as the Americans. They're just a big corrupt machine.
Well, our biggest problem was we got in bed with Batista.
Yes.
And, you know, this guy was involved with the mob. I mean, all the gambling casinos and stuff, he was skimming. He was out of touch with the Cuban people, but so the revolution, I think, was understandable to get Batista out, but then they turned even worse.
I mean, that's where I think, George, that expression comes from. He's a bad guy, but he's our bad guy.
Exactly. Next up.
You see that with dictators over and over and over again.
Let's go to Dick in Kalamazoo, Michigan. Hello, Dick. Go ahead, sir.
Hey, George.
Hi.
I love your show to pieces tonight.
Thank you.
There's a lot of stuff that I studied and I know about.
Oh, great.
Hey, we're already talking about the Bay of Pigs. See, Kennedy said you can invade, but if things get messed up, you're on your own.
You're on your own.
That's
yep.
right. And Nixon, back in the 50s, vice president, he was running the CIA.
Yes.
Yes. So,
you know your history, Dick.
Yeah. I know that it was Nixon and the CIA that assassinated JFK.
Well, I don't know about that, but you know what? A lot of strange theories abound out there. And the one thing which was interesting is during the debates where Nixon was just clobbered by Kennedy, Annie, Kennedy had found out about the invasion before the election. And he used Cuba as part of his platform of getting tough on communism and everything else and protecting Cuba. And Nixon couldn't say anything about it because it was a secret.
And can you imagine the power that gave Kennedy and the way that he, you know, really ran on that idea that he was going to put a stop to communism, specifically Vietnam, specifically Cuba. And
yep.
so when those were just two issues he couldn't back down off of, and he just put himself into a corner.
And it made him look tough, and it made Nixon look weak, because yes. Nixon, who was doing the Bay of Pigs, couldn't say anything about it.
Yes. I mean, it makes you want, it's back to that original thought you mentioned about where, you know, when you know something, who's using disinformation against whom?
Let's go to Thomas in La Jolla, California. Hey, Tom, go ahead.
Hi, George. Thank you for taking my call. Forgive me, I'm still a little upset about Stanton Friedman.
Oh, it was tragic. Tragic.
Yeah, God rest his soul. I mean, he's magnificent, you know.
I was holding his hand, getting him onto the stage, Tom, in Columbus. You know, he's 84 years old. I didn't want him to fall. You know, he was walking with me. And, you know, ironically, as I mentioned to everybody, he was my first radio interview when I was 21. And I conducted his last interview when he passed on. It's unbelievable.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Just a wonderful soul. I mean, I just, my first introduction to ufology was Stanton Friedman. And so, I mean, it's just, yeah.
Well, make sure you call in on the show Friday, the last hour. We're doing a little tribute.
Definitely. I will definitely listen to that.
Okay.
Annie, oh, wow, great research. I wanted to, couple of quick comments and then a question. First, the caller who called in, yes, L. Fletcher Prouty's secret team is awesome, and everybody should read it. There was another author, Donald Freed, that's F-R-E-E-D, as in David, Donald Freed. He was one of the original conspiracy researchers around the JFK assassination. And he wrote a book, this was like 47 years ago, called Executive Action. And I find it interesting that you mention that JFK had his own covert action group, which he personally signed off on, and it was called Executive Action. Donald Freed wrote this fictional book, Executive Action, in which he contended, and by the way, 45 years ago, I asked Donald Freed face-to-face, I said, is this book the truth or is this fiction? And he smiled and he said, he goes, I couldn't publish this as the truth. He goes, but as fiction, yeah, it comes very close. In his book, Executive Action, he contends that President Kennedy's own covert action group, which he signed off on, went rogue. Went off the reservation, if you know what I mean.
That's possible.
And from there, you know, coordinated, the book itself is about a case officer who coordinates between the Pentagon, between the NSA, and more importantly, with the mafia to bring all of these elements together to carry out Dallas, you know, the assassination of the president. And there was actually a movie made of the book Executive Action. It's so-so. I don't really recommend it, though it did have some top actors in it. But the book itself is page by page, paragraph by paragraph, sentence by sentence, word by word, absolutely riveting. When you read it, you say, yeah, this is probably how the assassination went down, and this is probably how everybody was brought to the table, the Pentagon, the covert action groups, the Cubans, the mafia. Everybody was sitting at the same table on how it was coordinated along with, you know, the...
Well, they may have all been involved, Tom, all of them. We'll be back. And welcome back with Annie Jacobson. We're going to go back to Thomas in La Jolla to finish his thoughts. Go ahead, Tom.
Hi, George. Yeah, basically, Annie, Mike, by the way, you're doing great research, and I truly appreciate it. The Coast audience does, too. But my question is, since you brought up the covert action group under Kennedy, which he signed off on, executive action. Again, the contention by Donald Freed was that executive action went rogue, went off the reservation, so to speak. And just like Julius Caesar and the takedown of Julius Caesar, they took down the president on November 22, 1963. And I was wondering if possibly you would comment on that.
You know, I don't have any facts in that arena. I think that the JFK mystery of who assassinated him is most definitely a mystery. Boy, do I hope someone somewhere is able to unearth some real solid documents that tell us that truth, because I don't think the truth is yet out there. I think the problem is there's so many different variants of speculation that it becomes difficult to discern what is speculation and what might have some legitimacy to it. Does that make sense?
Annie, what surprised you most regarding your research?
On Surprise Kill Vanish, on the assassination teams
mm-hmm.
in general. What surprised me was my own reaction to it, because the CIA's teams fall under the rubric of what's called the president's third option. The first option is diplomacy. The second option is military intervention. The third option is the CIA's hidden hand. That's what they call it.
Yeah.
So it's like when diplomacy isn't working and war is unwise, the president calls upon the CIA. And I was surprised to learn that that is actually an element of foreign policy that has been in effect since 1947, since the creation of the National Security Act. And all of the things that we know disparately, different of us who are lovers of history, say, you know, the invasion of Guatemala, or when we turned our bends and we took, you know, we knocked him out of power, or the Bay of Pigs, or when Trujillo was assassinated, you know, Vietnam, going through all the way to the present tense. I think what surprised me was, my goodness, all of these link up to a foreign policy concept that is the president's third option. It all is a system within a system. And that was unusual to me, because I had the sense that these were more individual operations.
You would think they would want to move the CIA in second, in military third, if that's the case, rather than full involvement. What do you think?
George, I think you hit the nail on the head. I think they do. I think the point is, that's exactly what they do. In other words, okay, I write in Surprise, Kill, Vanish about how the CIA, this was shocking to me, okay, and others, actually everything I learned was shocking, right? So when the Pentagon was planning its war in Iraq, which we all know now was a very, very bad idea, you could call that illegal.
Yeah, and we're still there.
But before that, 6 months before that, the CIA's paramilitary teams were in northern Iraq trying to assassinate Saddam Hussein's Mukhbarat, his version of the CIA. And how do I know this? Well, I interviewed Sam Faddis, who was in charge of the operation, and he told me on the record all about this. Why he was able to is still baffling to me. But so you see, in that situation, that was the second option, you know. I think the Pentagon was convinced that it was going to go in no matter what, but the president gave the go-ahead to allegedly, what they were trying to do was create a situation where Saddam Hussein got so angry that the CIA was provoking his men in northern Iraq up by near Erbil, that he would take an action that would make him vulnerable for us to assassinate Saddam Hussein.
Saddam Hussein was not a Boy Scout, and his sons were butchers. I mean, if they saw some Iraqi woman that was married, they'd kill the woman's husband just to be able to go after her. I mean, they were sick, sick individuals. But what did Saddam Hussein do, Annie, to us? I mean, he was our proxy. He fought with Iran for years at our bequest. What did he do wrong, other than going to Kuwait, where we basically told him it was okay? What did we do? What did he do to us for us to want to attack him and get him out?
You know, that is a great mystery, because you're absolutely right that he was a ally. He was essentially an asset of ours.
He went to April Gladsby and said, you know, basically, I'm having problems with Kuwait. They're slant drilling. They're taking my oil, whether it was his or not. That's what he perceived it to be. And she basically said, we're not going to get in the middle of an Arab dispute, and walked away.
And then we did.
And then he got involved to stop Kuwait from doing what they were doing, and then we hammered him. But then after that, after the Gulf War, which my Navy unit was called up for, I had retired from the Navy a month before. We were assigned with General Schwarzkopf to do his media work. But, you know, after the Desert Storm, which was in 91, and then we go back in 2003, what did he do then? I mean, the Kuwait War was way before that.
I think the reporter who's able to write that story that answers the question you just asked is going to win a Pulitzer Prize and be widely read.
Yeah.
I mean, really answer that question. Because, again, there's a situation that's a lot of speculation, but it doesn't quite add up. And I think there's a much more direct, specific answer that is out there. And because you set it up perfectly, which is, what had he actually done that would cause?
Yeah, he didn't have weapons of mass destruction. He was not part of Al-Qaeda. He didn't support bin Laden at all. I don't know what the guy did wrong.
So why did that administration have it out for him from the moment the planes struck the building?
Except he did, do one thing. He wanted to go off the dollar for oil. He wanted to use a different form of currency for that.
You know, that is one of the more compelling arguments I have heard. And I could.
That may have been his mistake.
Yes. And there's a book written about that. I wish I could remember the name, but a friend of mine who's a banker recommended that book that was written about that. And I have to say, George, I pride myself on being able to read pretty much anything.
Mm-hmm.
I couldn't read that book, meaning it was over my head.
Too complicated?
It was too complicated. I mean, it was brilliant, but I was just like, wow, my head could not handle the rubric of that information. And I imagine that I'm not the only person who could read it, which may be why we don't have that full story.
All right, let's go to Greg in New Jersey then. Greg, welcome to the program, sir. Go ahead.
Good morning. Actually, the great social commentator of the last 75 years, Noam Chomsky, has been running about that for 50 years.
Uh-huh.
Both Gaddafi and Mr. Hussein were overthrown by our corporate government because they were going to go off the petrol dollar, and that would have unraveled Wall Street and all types of stuff. I'd like to just make one thing and ask two things from Annie.
Sure.
If you look at the whole history of the CIA, it goes back to the Dulles brothers, good old Allen and his brother.
Whom Kennedy hated, by the way.
Well, there's a lot of reasons to hate them. They were lawyers with a firm called Sullivan Cromwell. I work in Manhattan. These, you know, venerable old, you know, these are the guys that represent the big-time criminals. They essentially represented the Chase Bank, which was dealing business with Nazi Germany all throughout the Second World War, from the 30s into the 40s with all the big, you know, industrial firms. And Dulles was one of the lawyers for them. He then becomes head of the CIA. I mean, I have to ask you, Annie, you know, cui bono in Latin, who benefits by all this? It's not us peasants here in America going to work every day. It's the corporate, the Fortune 100. And two quotes, I just want to see what you think. I think as Chomsky brought out in the 1980s, that the CIA was referred to by a lot of law enforcement here in the country as a cocaine importing agency, because they're the ones that was letting all the stuff come in, and some of their buddies were profiting from it. And the other thing is basically that, I think it's Ralph McGehee, the famous agent who came out, said basically he was, you know, a graduate of Ivy League schools and all that, a good guy, but he was in South America. Essentially, he called himself as part of the Murder Incorporated for the Fortune 100. Could you comment on that?
Oh,
interesting.
A lot has been written from that vector, let's say, right? So it exists, and there's a lot of arguments that support that. I don't write about that in Surprise, Kill, Vanish because it's got its own story, and there's a great story. There's a great book that the title is, I'm forgetting at the moment, that was written on that about the Dulles brothers specifically. I'll give you a little tangent story, which might be interesting for you in terms of metaphor, right? And that is that Alan Dulles' son was famously suffered a head wound in Korea when he was fighting in Korea. He was a young Marine in his early 20s, and his name was Alan Dulles Jr. And he disappeared from, you know, people knew that he had had this head wound and he had amnesia. No one had ever heard of him. Well, I tracked him down, and I report this story for my book, The Pentagon's Brain, because Alan Dulles, the son, suffered from a kind of amnesia where he can only remember the last 10 minutes of his life.
Jeez.
And so but he could remember impeccably everything that happened to him before 1952 when he had this head injury. And the Dulles, the father, the way that he became involved in a lot of these really gruesome programs, the sort of follow-ons to MK Ultra and things, and having to do with brainwashing and, you know, a lot of programs that bred a lot of paranoia, came out of the psychiatrist that he hired to try and treat his own son. And so it, as a metaphor, indicates this kind of when the personal becomes the political, and when you're driven by, you know, a drama in your own family life that can then become a national drama or a national secret because you have that kind of power. And there was no doubt that Alan Dulles, the CIA director, had that power, and it was extraordinary and it was dangerous. But I think you might enjoy reading my experience going to the home of Alan Dulles, the son, and interviewing him and what we talked about with his memory of 10 minutes.
West of the Rockies, Charlie's with us in Sacramento, California. Hi, Charlie.
Hey, George, how are you?
Okay, thanks.
To the guests, I'd like to ask about the Space Force, and the CIA has a branch, sort of like, you know, it has a maritime branch, land branch, and aviation branch. You know, the Space Force, part of its battle zone is the electromagnetic spectrum. So I'm trying to imagine operators with the CIA fooling with the Earth's magnetic spectrum. Do you have any comment on that?
Well, that's the most brilliant question I've had all day, because I have not even thought of that. And what, you know, air branch, maritime branch, ground branch, space branch, as you
sure.
Wow. I mean, we know about the Space Force, and I've written about the origins of the idea of weaponizing space in my book Area 51, when I wrote a lot about nuclear weapons, because we were setting off so many nuclear weapons in space. But my goodness, you have raised a really intriguing thing that I am now going to obsessively think about, which is what would that look like to have CIA paramilitary guys up there? Because I get this is what would be my guess, total speculation, right? It would have something to do with being able to garner access to other countries' satellites. So it would be like a human version of an anti-satellite weapon.
Mm-hmm. Or take them out.
Yes, exactly. To take them out without looking like we took them out.
I mean, can you imagine if our satellites went down, GPS is gone, smart cell phones are gone, all that stuff's gone, the kind of chaos, the internet in some cases, if it's not cabled, it may be satellite.
Pure chaos. It would be pure chaos.
Sure.
I mean, everything relies, all military technology now relies upon satellite technology.
Let's go to Jim in Arizona. Welcome to the program. Hi, Jim.
Hey, George, tonight.
Good to have you with us. Go ahead, Jimmy.
I hate to change the subject, but you got me thinking about the guy in Detroit that was disappeared.
Jimmy Hoffa.
Well, when I was a kid, they were building I think I know where he's at.
Where is he? Well, he's you know he's dead.
Part of the highway there.
Well, he could be. He could be. But save that for open lines next time. If we can, because we've only got a minute left with Annie. But There's another book for you, Annie. Jimmy Hoffa.
There you go. Your show is full of great ideas.
Well, and you're a great writer. How did you get involved in doing all these different topics? I mean, what led you into this direction?
Well, they do all, the past five books I've written do all link, you know, CIA, Pentagon, sort of military, industrial.
Yeah, it's like a puzzle, and each book is a piece.
Yes, it is, and I love reporting books so much. It's really where my heart and soul is, because it's the people that make my books interesting, the people I interview.
What's your next project?
Ooh, it's always a secret, George, you know that.
Come on, don't hold secrets from me.
You'll be the first to know. How about that?
Well, that's fair. When might it come out?
I write a book every 2 years, so I'll talk to you in 2 years.
Okay, all right. You got it.
Yeah.
And, you know, stay healthy and stay happy, okay?
Thank you so much for having me.
Okay, Annie. Annie Jacobson, her website, of course, linked up at coasttocoastam.com. It's her name, AnnieJacobson.com. The latest book we're talking about tonight has been Surprise, Kill, Vanish, The Secret History of CIA Paramilitary Armies, Operators, and Assassins. Up next, can you live off the grid if something happened? Could you? We're going to talk about that when we come back.